Return to Camp Blood, episode Lucky 13. Jason Voorhees, this is your life. This episode is sponsored by Scarefest 8. Head over to scarefestcon.com for convention dates and ticketing information.
Scarefest, the largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States, returns to the Lexington Center September 11th through the 13th. Meet over 80 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities. Plus, there's a costume ball, seminars, movie screenings, and lots of scary merchandise. For more info, visit thescarefest.com. Scarefest, September 11th through the 13th at the Lexington Center. Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Eric.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
What's up?
All right, before we start, haven't plugged this in a while, but we do have a Facebook page. Check it out at facebook.com/campbloodpodcast. We've done a few giveaways, and we're set to do a few more. So come on over, like the Facebook page. You could win yourself a mask. We also have an official Return to Camp Blood Twitter account, which you can tweet at Camp Blood Pod. So we're pushing back our regularly scheduled show in favor of this episode. Since this is our 13th episode, we kind of figured we'd do something to celebrate the death of the last vestiges of Jason's humanity. Plus, since we added Oz a little late in the game, I wanted to give him a chance to speak up about his favorite aspects of the films that he missed, and to sort of make up for the fact that the first couple episodes we did are horrible in terms of audio quality. So here we are.
Well, restart. That's what we're going to do. 2015. What are you
gonna do, you know? So pretty much what we're going to do here is, just kind of do a recap of what we've seen so far in parts 1 through 4. And I figured we'd do like a favorites type show. Favorite scene, favorite kill, favorite Jason, favorite final girl, all that shit.
Favorite hottie girl.
So, it's too bad Terry wasn't a final girl.
Hey, she's still one of my favorites, man.
Oh. Yes, me too.
Rightly so.
She still looks good.
Yeah. I seen a picture of her from a convention not too long ago. Was it a mugshot?
I've seen a couple mugshots, yeah. She has some DUI problems, but she still looks good.
Hey, when you get killed by Jason in such a way that no one can see, and there's insinuations of sexual mutilation and cannibalism, that'll drive you to fucking alcoholism, sir.
I would eat that shit.
Ew, this is a family show.
Haven't you heard?
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean. I didn't know I said that in my outside voice.
All right, so favorite scene. You know what? I'm gonna save mine for the last. I'll let you guys start this time because normally I bring up a topic, then I talk about what I think, and then I let you guys talk. So why don't you guys go first?
I say it probably won't come as much of a surprise, but honestly, like. My favorite scene is just the Crazy Ralph one.
What's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Yeah, well, which Crazy Ralph scene are you talking about? The one from the first film?
The where they meet up with him in the street. You know, the whole going to Camp Blood, ain't you? That whole scene. It's just because it's just funny.
Okay, part
shit.
One.
Yeah. It's just funny as shit, and never gets old. I've sat there and watched it on YouTube, like I found a loop of it or some such, and just kept watching it. It's just funny.
Yeah, maybe we should put on a 10-hour loop of Crazy Ralph for our channel.
I mean, seems reasonable.
Oh, yeah, we do have a YouTube channel, but there's nothing on it yet, so stay tuned for updates about that.
It's coming. Yes,
it is coming.
So, Eric, what is your favorite scene from the first four movies?
From the my favorite scene? I know what my favorite death is, but my favorite scene, in all honesty, it's when Jason gets hanged. He falls out the top of the barn.
That's brutal.
Chris pushes him out, and you just see his whole body jerk down, and that motherfucker ain't dead.
Of course he's not dead.
that was brutal, man. And you even hear it's like, huh, you know, you can hear that he makes that sound too.
Yeah, that is one of the more, like, generally in these movies, the some of the deaths are like over the top, and you know, you could tell they're fake for the most part. But that's a scene where you're like, damn. That looked like somebody just got hanged for real.
Well, yeah, especially because where he's falling down and he's reaching for something too. I mean, that's instinctively what you would think somebody would do, you know? So, I mean, you're right, it does. It looks extremely realistic.
So, all right, Oz, what's your favorite scene, man?
I'd say my favorite scene of the first four, I guess I got to go with my favorite installment, the final chapter. It's got to be the dead fuck scene. Where he's typing on the cans and you know, hey Jimbo, it's got to be my favorite.
Yeah, he's, you know, for a long time I had thought that he was just, you know, tapping on something invisible, but you're right.
It was cases of beer.
If you really look close, you can see it.
Then the whole, well, there is no computer. Aha, there's no Betty either. It's like, like, what are you gonna say to that? You know,
I'm gonna go with Oz on this one. Although I'm gonna do a slightly different scene. My favorite scene out of the first four movies has got to be hands down the Corey Feldman die scene.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, granted, the dude is a fucking joke and a half now, but back then
he was still a joke and a half.
No. During that whole movie, dude, Corey Feldman displayed like the best acting in that whole movie. You know, from the scene where he's, you know, geeking out from about to see some titties.
I think he really was hoping he was going to see some titties.
I know it looked like it.
I would be.
But for me, that scene, it actually looks like Corey Feldman is flipping out. it's disturbing as shit.
Yeah. It does look like he's legitimately lost it.
All right. So since, Eric, you wanted to talk about your favorite kill. Let's go that route next. What's your favorite kill, Eric?
Well, since we here at Return to Camp Blood, we counselors love to see douchebags die. And
that is true.
Thus far, Axel has been the biggest douchebag. So
I would disagree with you on that, but his death scene was awesome. Fuck Rick.
Hey, he was persistent. He wasn't pushy.
Oh, bullshit.
I haven't seen you in 5 years.
You want to fuck?
he had seen Chris before that, because if you listen to him when she hops on, he's giving her the piggyback. He's like, I think you've gained some weight since last summer. So he has seen her since the whole supposedly run-in thing with Jason. But
no, I never caught that.
But are you sure he didn't say since the last time I saw you?
Nope, he said since last summer. But case in point, still last summer, a year ago, again, still, you know, it's kind of a douchebag thing to, hey, I haven't seen you in 6 to 9 months. Let's get it on, you know. Never mind your emotional and state and how you're doing after possibly being assaulted. But I've got an erection. I've got to do something about it.
Yeah. Priorities, man.
He is a take care of me type of person. That's funny.
I think all the blood had rushed from another
part. We know it went back out his eye, though.
Yeah. In 3D, no less.
It did flow back into his other head. Yes.
He got it all over Mrs. V's sweater, man.
So, hey, speaking of that, do you think Jason like took that sweater and replaced his bombs with it?
Like, it was like he felt like she needed a new one and just kind of like, hey, you know what? I got this one. Why not?
Yeah, this one's getting a little ragged, you know. So, you know, it's,
here you go, we'll Mom.
Save a trip to the consignment shop here. I'll just grab this. This guy don't need it no more.
I think my favorite one so far has been I'll probably say I can't think of his name right now. My guy in the wheelchair.
Mark.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah. He gets the machete in the face and then gets rolled down the hill. It's just, I don't know, something about that scene does it for me. It's just, it's crazy, like front to back.
Well, and then as he's coming down the stairs, and then it goes to white like it did in the first movie in that first kill. But I always wondered, why did they never, that's the only two times they've ever done that in the series. They never ever went back to that. And I always thought it was so cool that when they did that on those kills.
Like a jarring cut. I mean, I agree with you completely. They should. That's one aspect of continuity they should have kept fluid throughout at least the human Jason years.
Doing it like the horse on Animal House.
Oh, that's, I need to watch that again. That's been so long since I saw that movie.
Mine's close, but I gotta go. I'll stick with E in part two. There's a lot of really excellent kills, but I gotta go with the double impalement, man. With Sandy. Yeah. I mean, it was close, that or Andy getting chopped down the middle doing the handstand, as dumbass as that is. But I gotta go with the DP, man. It adds a little bit of psychological, because you see her, because she sees Jason coming, right? And she's like, bracing, and you can almost see her like trying to move out, she's trying, but he's on top of her, so she can't move, So it adds a little bit, that the poor dude, I mean, he just, at least he never saw what hit him, but she, I mean, that just adds to the intensity of it, I think, that she sees it coming, and then next thing you do is you see the spear not only through the bed but into the freaking floor, into the wood. I mean,
you hear it thud. I mean, that's just some seasoning on that kill. That's an awesome kill.
Yeah,
definitely a hell of a way to get offed.
Well, they got offed before that.
Did you say OFT or OFF?
Whatever works for the conversation.
I think both would fit in that installment. Yes,
it was like a double entendre of sorts.
Look at you using smart people words.
I get them in once or twice a week.
So my favorite one, my favorite death is from part three, Vera's death scene, dude. I love that scene. Just the way that Jason shoots her, fucking drops the harpoon gun and walks away. That is hands down my favorite scene. Because he just acts like, he's like, yeah, bitch, I just shot you through the eye.
I'm out.
There's nothing you can do about it.
when he's aiming, it's like, I've got you in my crosshairs. Wait just a minute. I'm not going to go for body shot. I'm going to hit your eye.
I got to tell you, man, when I was trying to decide on my favorite kill, it was either between Mark or that one, honestly, because that one is, that shit is crazy.
The thing with Vera, I think that's cool. It reminded me, when I saw it, I'm like, oh man, she's turning into my mom, I was like, oh, now don't do that, that's not funny. Like, man, Jason shoot this bitch, she sounds like my mom.
So
but out of, she just stood there though. I'm sorry, if somebody's pointing that, I'd be moved. I'd be like ducking and, what the fuck are you pointing that shit at me? Standing,
duck under the water.
Go for a night swim.
Water displaces the forward momentum of the arrow.
I know, right? Well, she wasn't thinking.
No, she wasn't. That's why she doesn't have a brain.
I'm sure some of it exited the back of her head when the arrow went through. So you can forgive her for losing her brain for a minute.
So out of the first four movies, what's you guys' favorite chase scene? We haven't really discussed that yet.
So, for the latter half of this show, a lot of my stuff comes from part two. And I'm going to say that if I had to decide, the final chase scene with Jenny and part two is probably my favorite chase scene. Well, for reasons I'll get into in a little bit, it will become more obvious why that is the case. But you really see Jason's humanity showing through pretty much all throughout part two. And so I'll just leave it at that for now, because I'm going to touch on more of that when we get into some more favorites.
I mean, you can't go wrong with part two. I mean, it's just so drawn out. It starts with Jenny and Paul and her saying someone's in the room. And I mean, it's just on from there. I mean, it's just constant. And the part two has the best score for the chase scene. I mean, it's malevolent from her backtracking, nailing him in the groin, to the pitchfork through the bug, to her peeing over a rat or a mouse, not even a rat, a field mouse.
Yeah, that wasn't a rat. That was a pretty clean looking thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd own that for a pet.
That's weird, yo.
Hey, this is the rat that made Jenny Fields piss her own pants in Jason's shack.
No, they were in a cabin. They weren't in Jason's shack when she peed.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
I think I have to go with that one, too. This is going to be the one time we get a carbon copy here. I got to go with that one for pretty much every reason Eric said. That shit is intense. I really got – I don't really have any way to further emphasize it. It's just nuts from beginning to end.
It really was really a cool chase. And the way they shot it made it seem like that chase scene went on for like almost all night, you know, because they had the scene where, you know, Jenny's running and she's looking over her shoulder and it fades to Jason running with the pitchfork. And I mean, it just gives you the feeling that, you know, that like she was running from his ass all night.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what it felt like. I mean, I'll talk about a couple of the others, but that one happens to be my favorite. I mean, I thought I was gonna be the oddball saying part two, but I mean, part three, that has an excellent chase scene. I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's not drawn out as long as part two, but still there's aspects of it that, I mean, we get the first body thrown through a window, you know.
No, that was part one. We had Brenda thrown through the window.
Well, with Jason anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that even gives Eric more that he was watching his mom kill everybody.
Well, it doesn't take a genius to decide to throw somebody out of a window.
Yeah, well, you know, if it's the nearest thing you can use, you know, you might as well utilize the window.
No, not throw somebody in the window.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to, you know, make your own door.
That makes sense.
Because if you know, I mean, that's the first time that's really the only time in the whole series that someone gets thrown through the window and then Jason comes through that same window like he's coming, like he was making his own way in, you know? Every other time is somebody gets thrown through and it's just like, that was it, you know?
Well, Trish met him with a hammer when he tried that with her.
Well, that was, yeah, but he went to the other window at least. Going back to part three in that chase scene, it was pretty intense. The only part that I still, every time I see it, it has me scratching my head is when she's hiding up there on that beam and he can't find her. And I mean, you see, he's just going ape shit, tearing that barn apart. He's pissed off because he can't find her.
Right.
Why didn't she just stay there? I mean, why did she, you know, start moving around and then all of a sudden say, hey, you know what? I'm going to knock this guy in the head with my ass. I mean, I don't understand.
I'll say this as I pointed out several times, horror movie, man. you got to suspend that shit for a little while, man. There's going to be some dumb shit that happens. Otherwise everybody packs the fuck up and goes home and you never see the movie, you know? And Jason's just wandering around like, well, fuck.
Scratching his head, like making the ch-ch-ch sound.
and you can see him doing it. Like, look at this guy, man.
I really dig the part two, but since Eric already took that one, I'll have to go with part four. I loved the chase scene, you know, especially the stop and the start. It really added some, like, suspense, especially with, you know, when Jason's chasing Trish and, you know, she runs up the stairs and they stop and they kind of look at each other and then they start again and she jumps her ass out the window and she's trying to get him away so that Tommy is supposed to go, you know, find help, you know, and then she goes back to the house and, you know, the whole, you know, I'm going to give you something to remember somebody by, and, you know, she starts kicking the shit out of him while he's trying to, I mean, I think that one was a pretty badass chasing as well.
Agreed. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. It was. I'm not taking anything from it by pointing out two. Never forget the original because, I mean, that was one hell of a chase scene as well.
Yeah, but it was.
I wish they would have kept the feel, like the all night, I'm going after you and I'm not stopping feel and that they had with part two. But part four, that was a lot of back and forth. And I mean, that was like they were playing chess, only she was down to two pawns and Jason hadn't lost one yet.
Yeah. And Trish, I mean, Trish must have taken some like female, you know, self-defense classes or something, because when Jason like goes after her, man, she's kicking the shit. I mean, she had already messed up his one hand. So, I mean, he's trying to get at her and she's just kicking the living shit out of him. Just like you would think they'd teach you in one of them classes, you know, when someone's trying to assault you.
Yeah, just start whacking their hand when they grab you through the stairs. Start whacking their hand with a machete. Works like a charm. Then when they grab your little brother through the window, do not forget to grab a claw hammer and repeatedly hit the person in the face. When that doesn't work, turn it around backwards and go for the back of the neck.
Yeah, that shit is textbook.
Hey, you know, we should start the Jason's Women's School of Self-Defense.
Because batshit scared crazy does not work. That gets you dead in Friday the 13th.
All right. So, favorite Jason. All right. So, up to this point, we've had three Jasons. I guess you could include Pamela in there. I don't know what you guys are going to say. So, if Pamela is your favorite, that's cool too. Because she's so awesome, she can be included in this list.
Well, four Jasons, counting Steve Dash and Warrington Gillette.
Well, if you want to go that route, then you got to include Ellen Lutter. You got to include Ari Lehman. There's a lot of people you got to include if you're going to go that detailed.
Yeah, that's true.
Fair enough.
But Steve Dash did he did the whole movie except that scene with the makeup on. I mean, that.
No.
Yeah.
No. A woman played him when you only saw his feet.
Yeah, that's true. at the beginning, the itsy bitsy spider scene. Yeah.
Since it has to be specifically Jason, well, I guess it doesn't have.
No, I said it could be Pamela too.
All right. Well, then I gotta give it a tie. I gotta give it to Pamela in the first one and Jason in the third one. Being that, like, for Jason in the third one, just because he just lost his shit for about 90 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Everybody got it, and they got it bad. You know what I mean?
Well, when you roid up that much overnight, man, you seem to be get pretty pissed off, I guess.
Well, yeah, of course, you know. I mean, that's that's life. Yo. Copyrighted. So... There's that reason, but then like with Pamela, just how well that character was acted and how she goes from seemingly normal to completely and obviously insane by the end of the movie is just, the acting was phenomenal throughout the movie.
Pamela too was a manipulator too. I mean, she would totally mess with you. Jason will just take your ass out. You know, Pamela when Alice comes out there, she's all like, "Oh, well, I can't help you if you don't shut your face, you know, and tell me, you know, what's going on." I mean, so she's like all like acting like all lovey and like, "I'm going to help you and I'm here to save the day," not knowing that, you know, I'm going to gut you like a fish is what she's thinking on the inside. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's a little added dimension to that character.
And that's my whole point for her, is just the depth of the character was great. And that's why it's between those two for me.
I'm going to stick with my original, and it, you know, I love Rich Brooker playing Jason. I mean, he was the first to don the mask, but Ted White was just vicious, and I loved his portrayal of the character still. I mean, it's bar none my favorite.
Yeah.
I think that he actually had the body type naturally, whereas like Richard Brooker or Steve Dash, well, Steve Dash was only like 6'1". Richard Brooker was like, what, 6'3"? Right. Then
Ted White's 6'5".
Yeah, Ted White jumps up to 6'5". And, I mean, for God's sakes, he was the Duke stuntman. That dude was enormous.
Well, and he was also a lot not really burlier, but he was just more of a, I mean, he was just a bigger man all around than Brooker was.
Lot more imposing.
Yeah, Brooker was. I mean, he's a very close second to my favorite Jasons. But I mean, they even had to. They put certain like body. I can't remember what they said it was.
It was prosthetic shoulders, chest, and a back
to make him because he was really a lot slender, a lot more slender than he even appears in the movie. But just to try to give him more girth. But Ted White, yeah, I mean, you stole my thunder a little bit. But like I said in the final chapter episode, I mean, you know, to echo your comments, Eric, you know, he was just so ferocious and menacing in that installment. And he was agile. I mean, he was running after Trish and, you know, jumping through windows. I mean, that scene where he busts through the door after she hits him with the hammer and he throws it at her, I mean – that still makes the hair on the back of my neck go up when I see it. And I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it. It still freaks me out. but I mean, that was just, I mean, he just seemed like in that installment more than any of the others, he just is legitimately just pissed off. And I mean, everybody's going to get it and they're going to get it in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
So as I alluded to earlier with all the part two discussion, my favorite Jason in this stretch of films is actually Steve Dash. You know, he played the mask guy, the mask Jason in that film. Because to me, the part two Jason is like the most realistic. He wasn't some big hulking fucking giant. And he just looked like, you know, he had been living off the land for a while. And because of that, you know, he kind of like had to stalk and vet his victims before he went in for the kill. Because he didn't, you know, it's quite obvious, especially in the scene with him and Jenny and Paul in the dark room, that he doesn't have the, like, full brute strength just to overcome anybody that gets in his way.
Right.
I mean, Paul damn near, you know, overpowers him in that scene.
Yeah.
And plus, him, watching him getting kicked in the balls and reacting, that was, you know, that showed his humanity pretty fucking well, I'd
yes,
say.
It did.
Yeah. That shows you that is effective for anybody.
Well, I mean, if you go on like the idea that Jason didn't ever die, then I think that the part two Jason stays the most realistic to that idea. Now, if you want to say he came back to life when his mom died or whenever, sure, he can be this big hulking fucking great white giant. And great white as in the shark, not as in a person.
well, you know, I mean.
I mean, I guess they are great white, big white dudes, but yeah. that doesn't sound what I was saying.
Kind of both.
And I always wondered, you know, as Jason gets so much bigger and as the installments go on, does he have kind of like an Incredible Hulk kind of thing that, you know, the madder he gets, the bigger he gets, the more powerful he gets? I don't know.
The more dead he gets, the stronger he gets.
Yeah.
He killed the sheriff because he found his gym.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my shitter. Don't go in there.
I mentioned that scene on one of the Friday pages. I can't remember which one. I'm a member of so many. And it was hilarious because I was vindicating the cannibal rapey guy thing and just doing it trolling somebody is all I was doing. I can't help it. And so, after a slight diatribe of retort from the director, leaving it up to the viewer's perception in part three as to Jason's ploys, if you will. But then I said, well, what about the shack scene? And then I went through the deputies there. Alice has ice pick in her head. And I was like, why is Terry there? Where's the blood? We never saw her die. She just sprawled out there on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, that scene definitely does cause a lot of questions rather than answer any of them. So speaking of girls, you like that segue? What is your, let's get into our favorite final girls. And a final girl is the girl who has survived against all odds, she survived the night and come out on top against the killer. In which case, Jason, obviously. Or Pamela, if you're going to go for Alice.
You sir, know me too well. I gotta go with Alice. Just and I pointed out on a previous episode how big a fan I am of the first one, and I just thought that character, just, you know, her making it through all that and everything, and just the way it played out, it was great. Just the whole thing.
Yeah, no doubt. My favorite part about that whole final scene with her and Pamela is when Pamela's just smacking the shit out of her.
Yo, it's that is not a comedy scene, but it always plays out like that to me.
She's like, smack, smack, here, get over there.
You know, Jenny Fields, that was one hell of a girl. I mean, for a final girl to go through everything that she went through and to play on, to be the first to play on Jason's psyche and go balls out Mama Voorhees trying to subdue him any way that she could. I mean, Jenny was probably my favorite final girl.
Are you reading my notes right now? Because that's pretty much exactly everything that I wanted to say about her.
we think alike.
Yeah, since you brought her up, I'll go ahead and do mine. I mean, first off, she's cute as shit. I wouldn't call her like super hot, but she's cute as fuck. I love that about her. And you know, when you first see her and you know what she's gonna get put through, you fucking feel bad for her. Like some of the final girls, it's like, okay, you're gonna get put in this situation, but it's not a big deal. But her, I just felt bad for her, like through the whole beginning of the movie. And then on top of that, you know, when they're in the bar scene and she's sort of like trying to empathize with Jason's situation, that just makes it even worse for me, because it's like she feels bad for the dude that's about to try to kill her. You know, and like Eric said, she has the presence of mind to get inside Jason's head and fucking survive. So yeah, Jenny Fields, my favorite final girl also.
That's reasonable. Them crickets.
Well, you two of you guys took my favorite. You know, Jenny, I mean, I met her, she's really cool, and she carries around that freaking pitchfork to do pictures with people. It's really funny.
Oh, nice.
And I mean, I got her a picture of her on top of my desk, you know, right now. But since you guys went that way, I guess I'd have to go with Chris, only for the fact that it seemed more realistic at the end. Because I mean, she totally, for everything she went, I mean, she freaking lost it. I mean, she, you know, was wigging out bigger than shit in the back of that cop car after she'd made it through everything. And it just made it seem legit, you know, like I could totally see somebody doing that, because we had already had a couple movies where some people survived and, you know, yeah, they're dealing with some shit, but they seem like they're pretty much okay. So I think it was a good, way to, you know, put it in there that, you know, yeah, she may have survived, but man, she's royally screwed up because of this whole ordeal.
Yeah. Whatever happened between her and Jason when she was under the tree after her mom smacked her, that was definitely traumatizing. Then Rick trying to impose himself on her, and she's just trying to get her bearings back. And right. that's causing more than you come through with a killer and... That's just that adds up to a broken mind.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah. No doubt.
I dig Trish, but she was just too much of a prude to me. I don't know.
Well, I mean, for me with her, it's not so much that. It's just for the simple fact that they cast a physically strong looking woman for her. And so you kind of knew, like, well, if she is, you know, there at the end, she's going to come out on top. I mean, she's athletically built. Well, you know, she's a prude. So you know right there she's got to be the fucking final girl. But, like, that's why I can't say, even though she, like you said before, she put up one hell of a fucking fight against Jason. I don't know. I just feel like Jenny is just so sweet and innocent and so cute, and I really didn't want to see nothing bad happen to her.
No, yeah, Jenny was like, it's like what you would pick. I mean, like the perfect girl. I mean, she's like the tomboy who can, you know, get out and play softball or get dirty or, you know, go camping or whatever. But then there's also times where she can fix herself. I mean, she looks pretty hot, you know. I mean, she's like the all around, like pretty much total package, if you will.
Yeah. 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 I can't elaborate on that much because I don't want my wife to hear it, but yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. So,
she's the total package in Friday, baby. Not in real life. That's what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's get into some listener mail. All right, yeah, we only have a little bit of mail this week, but I did want to go ahead and talk about it in this episode. So Chris Cutterback wrote an email to us. Just wanted to send a shout out to Creep, which is me, Ed, which is E, and Eric, doing the 75th proud. Yeah, because back in the day, me, Eric, and E, we were all in the 75th Fighter Squadron together, which is how we met. And this guy was pretty much, well, he was my first supervisor, and I think he was E's first supervisor, too.
The only thing I recall for certain is the first time I met Chris. A very drunk morning. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, when he had just got back from the desert, and we roll up to his house drunk as fuck at like 7 in the morning.
That's your new airman.
I know, right? That's pretty much how the conversation went. All right, so he says, I just want to tell you guys how much I am enjoying the podcast so far. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Much appreciated.
My question is, do any of you know what the origin is or the exact words or sounds are for the iconic ch-ch-ch sound bar that is ever present in each movie? I mean, as soon as you hear this sound, you know that you're in the world of Friday the 13th. I was just wondering if there is maybe an interesting background or origin story behind this sound bar. Also, have the words or sounds changed over the years? Keep up the good work. Well, sir, I think we've touched on this like briefly in other episodes, but the composer of the first film, Henry Manfredini, actually came up with that noise, and it's a play off Betsy Palmer's Killer Mommy, Killer. And so what he actually did was run Kill, 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 Mom, Mom, Mom into some sort of effects loop. What is that called?
It's called an echoplex.
Yeah, the echoplex. And that's where the iconic, you know, ch-ch-ch comes from.
It was actually just the consonant sound from the kill, the ki, and then the ma from mom, mama.
Yeah, but I think that he actually said the whole word. It's just how he set up the effects made it sound like it sounds in the movie.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but
well, it has changed also. So I mean, in later installments, it could be that they went for the whole, but for the very first film, it was definitely the consonant and just the beginning of those words.
And I think it stays pretty true up through part four, but whenever you hit part five, and we're talking about human Jason, and this isn't even Jason, but at the end, when Tommy grabs the mask, it's saying, Tommy, 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 kill, kill, kill. And in part eight, it's saying, Jason, kill. But it's still all played through the same echoplex, so it's got that sound. But if you listen really hard, you can hear the slight differences.
Yeah, because actually Manfredini talks about that in the Crystal Lake Memories. If Giver. If you watch that, he talks about how he did that, and it is a pretty cool thing. He his score definitely did make that movie, because a lot of people have said if you watch that movie with any other, you know, music or whatever, it's just not the same. It really is what made that movie.
All right, and Michael David, and this was a comment on the show notes for our episode 5, Did Jason Really Drown When He Was a Boy? Which you can find at campbloodpodcast.com/5. He says, you have figured Jason's age incorrectly. He allegedly drowns in 57, but the killings in the first film don't take place until many years later when Pamela revisits the camp. Jason could have easily been well into his 30s by the start of part 2. So about that, as far as his age is concerned, and I went back and listened to the episode in question after we got the comment. I think that what happened is that while I said they made him look like he was into his mid to late 20s in part 2, I had, I think, intended on continuing that thought with what his actual age would have been had he not died. Only for whatever reason, I didn't. I mean, it was in my notes and shit, but for some reason, I relied on what age he appeared to be, which for me, when Warrington Gillette jumps out at the end, he looks like he's in his early 20s at that point. And with the janky math that I did in my head during the episode, I fucking got it wrong. So, but for the record, Jason was born in 1946. His alleged drowning took place in 57, which would put him at 11 or so. If he came back when his mom died in 1979, he would have been around 16 during the events of part 2. I think once you see him in part 3, it's pretty safe to say that he is not fucking 16. I mean, in part 2, you might be able to stretch it, but I think by the time you see him in part 3 and 4, there's no way that he's that young. So if Jason did drown in 57, he would have been around 38 during the events of part 2, which, again, to me, he looks like in his early to mid-20s in part 2 when you see Warrington Gillette unmasked. But in the beginning of part 3, and when you see him unmasked, he definitely looks older. So thanks for the correction, Michael. I think that was just a fucking screw-up on my part, even though I had all that shit in my notes.
Yeah, we're not all as perfect as we seem.
Hey, and feel free to point out our mistakes, because I have no problem getting on the air and doing a correction.
Absolutely no problem. Not.
Except for mine, there will be consequences.
Little Jason over there. Little Jason.
You know what?
All right, gentlemen. Final thoughts before we close out the show tonight.
Well, just pretty cool that we're doing this whole kind of look back on the 13th episode, and just real quick, just wanted to thank everybody for listening, you know, writing in, whatever, typing in as it were, and you know, just keep listening.
Definitely. Just thank everybody. I mean, I never thought that we'd get this far. I thought we'd be through the movies, and turns out we're not even halfway through yet, and it's still going strong. I mean, as long as you guys keep liking what we put out, we'll keep doing it. And thank you so much for your support. It's been wonderful.
I got to echo Eric's comments that, yeah, this is first I got to thank Chris and E and Eric for giving me a chance to add me to the show. When I first, contacted you guys, I mean, it was just because you guys were going to talk about my favorite episode. And I just thought it'd be cool to come on and talk to you guys. And you guys end up bringing me on, and I'm having a great time doing it. And hopefully we're just getting started and getting on to bigger and better things, and hope people like what we're doing. And one last thing that I'd like to add is that my favorite hottie, I guess, from the whole, we didn't do favorite hotties from the show. It's got to be Terry or
Terry. I second that.
Yeah. Terry. Third and then it was a very close is Judy Aronson that played Sam in Final Chapter, man. Those two are like head and, you know, it's hard to pick one over the other, especially since I met Judy Aronson and she looks just as hot now as she did in that film.
All right. You can support the show as always by rating us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever the hell else you listen to us on. Actually, we're currently sitting at 5 5-star reviews on iTunes right now, so we appreciate the shit out of that. if you want to support us financially, check out campbloodpodcast.com/donate for options. If you want to ask us a question or vindicate a theory you might have, you can contact the show by sending an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. You can also text or leave us a voicemail at 757-637-0216. Until next time.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Return to Camp Blood is a proud member of the Tangent Bound Network.
Do I sound like the mic's far enough away from me that to eliminate whatever noise you were talking about?
The noise that you need, the way you eliminate that noise is keep your mouth hydrated.
Oh.
You know, if you need some help with that.
I think Eric's out of lube.